Here we are in the Congressional Corner with Tim Versalotti, the director of the Western New England University Poll, a favorite of mine, that's for sure, and professor of political science with deep insights into the way that it works. So I guess I want to ask you first about Richie Neal, who I very much admire. He has an opponent, Alex Morris, the Holyoke mayor. And I'm wondering, and Richie Neal, of course, is the chairman of the powerful Ways and Means Committee, maybe the most important committee in the Congress. I just wondered how that race is going. You can't take it. Well, the one thing we know now is no incumbent could take anything for granted, right?
Absolutely. The past election cycle, 2018, showed that any entrenched incumbent would be wise to look over his or her shoulder, because in the past, when party politics rested on people waiting their turn, you could be comfortable as an incumbent. That's not the case anymore. And that's certainly not the case in the Richie Neal, Alex Morris race. It has really changed some things about life in the first district, which include our Western New England is in that district. Neal is much more present in the district these days, and his campaign really has a rapid response approach. If there is any hint of a criticism from Alex Morris, any suggestion that he might be making some inroads in Neal's support, the campaign responds right away. It is clear, even though Neal has a significant advantage in terms of fundraising, that they're taking nothing for granted. They're taking this very seriously.
Do you think that means that they might be showing unnecessary fear?
The impression I get is that they're simply leaving nothing to chance. We don't have many metrics for judging the state of the race. There hasn't been public polling, and it's rare to see public polling in a congressional a House race, and it's also very tricky to do. But we do know from fundraising that while Alex Morris had some initial success, Neal really dwarfs him in terms of fundraising. Neal had more than $4 million in the bank at the end of the last reporting period, but that's been a while, December 31st. We're coming up on a deadline for the first quarter, and voters will see a lot more fundraising appeals if they live in the first district between now and March 31st. That's the deadline. We'll see those campaign fundraising reports by April 15th at the Federal Election Commission, and we'll get a better sense of the shape of the race in terms of whether Alex Morris is being successful in raising money, and we'll get some sense of how they're spending as well. What are they spending it on consultants, on direct mail? Are they buying up ad time for when we get closer to the September 1st primary? We can learn a lot from those campaign finance reports.
So why don't you just do a poll, please? I mean, of course, I was being sarcastic, but because it's not that easy, you got to have a lot of money to do a poll. And you gotta
polls are expensive. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yes.
I'll bet you anything that they're polling, they know what's going on.
Absolutely.
We don't.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. And the other metrics that we think about, yard signs, letters to the editor, comments online, tweets, posts on Facebook, those are not reliable indicators of public sentiment in a race. They're simply not representative samples. I would suggest that the letters that the roundtable receives are probably not a representative sample either.
Couldn't agree with you more. Agree with you more. We get them, for example, we've certainly been hearing from the Bernieites in great length. You would think by the relative inspection of the letters that Bernie would have taken Massachusetts, only he didn't by a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So vocal supporters doesn't always equate to a multitude of supporters, for sure.
Now, the Democrats hope to keep the House and Republicans hope to keep the Senate. What are your insights?
This has entered into the calculus for the Democratic presidential primaries, which candidate would be more effective in pursuing the Democratic Party's two goals of flipping the Senate. They've got to protect all their seats and then flip four. And one of the seats they have to protect is Doug Jones in Alabama, which is going to be a huge, huge challenge. And then the goal.
I was going to say, good luck, Charlie.
Yeah. He won't draw the quality of opponent he had the last time.
No,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then to hold on to the House. And so we're beginning to see in the rhetoric from supporters of Bernie Sanders and from supporters of Joe Biden who would be more effective at achieving those two goals. And there's a certain amount of queasiness among Biden supporters, believing that with Sanders at the top of the ticket, those 40 plus seats that flipped to the Democrats in 2018 would somehow be endangered, those House seats, because those tended to be moderate Democrats running in districts that went for Donald Trump by a few points in 2016. And those incumbents are going to have to spend all of their time distancing themselves from Bernie Sanders if he's the nominee. Haven't seen any polling data on that yet. It's just the sort of conventional wisdom, the speculation that we're getting at this point. But we also know that candidates in the mold of Bernie Sanders and AOC running in districts that red districts that they were trying to flip did not have success in 2018. And so the question is, what's going to happen? And we know from political science research that first re-election campaign, when you're a new member of the House of Representatives, is really critical. That's the one where you're most likely to get turned out. You haven't been in long enough to build up that name recognition, to build up those advantages. So those holding on to the House has become an important calculation in the presidential primary process for the Democrats.
Now, we keep hearing Tim Versalotti, pollster, that the polls are showing that any of the Democratic candidates could beat Donald Trump. I dismiss that out of hand because there seems to be a political wisdom among many that Trump is going to win. What do you think?
I would say this far out, yes, to take those polls with a grain of salt. We just don't know. The economy stays on an even keel, and that's an open question right now with the threat of coronavirus and the reaction of the markets to that. If the economy stays strong, though, that gives an incumbent president the edge. I think it's reasonable to expect that it will be close, and we know because of the structural advantages for Republicans in the Electoral College, it's not enough for a Democrat to win. A Democrat's got to win by 4 or 5 percentage points minimum, according to the estimates I've seen, in order to have a fighting chance in the Electoral College. And so polls that show any of the Democrats a few points ahead of Donald Trump, that just won't get the job done, even if that's the case in the fall.
You know so much, Tim Versalotti. You should have my job, and you should be on all the time because you know so much more than the rest of us. And I so
couldn't do it. Oh, those medical shows where the people are calling in. You're a pro at that. I'd really struggle.
All you have to do is be a hypochondriac. So
there you go.
So it's great to talk to you. And Tim Versalotti, you are terrific. Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and one of the most insightful guys I know. Thanks for being with us, Tim.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.